Hey, it's Greg Gutfeld, and this is The One. At this point, there should be great music that comes out after I say The One. It's The One with Greg Gutfeld. I'm excited, as always. I have a really interesting guest because this guest I consider to be a good friend of mine that I've known for a while. You know, when I was a kid, there was this phrase that they always had called household names. A household name was like a product or a person, you know, that every household knew. It was if you were famous, you were called a household name, like John Wayne. Or it could be a product like Goodyear or Nesquik, a household name. My next guest is blessed and in a way burdened by being a household name in the sense that her last name is Breitbart. Susie Breitbart was Andrew Breitbart's wife. And I met Susie through Andrew had to be maybe 12 years ago. First of all, I want to say hello. Susie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so happy that you were willing to talk to me.
Well, you are a good friend, as you said, so I'm always happy to talk to you.
Well, it's always lovely to hear your voice. I want to talk about how we first met. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Andrew helped launch the Huffington Post.
And, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And had worked with Arianna Huffington. And I was living in London, writing for Maxim UK. No one really knew who I was. But I started writing for the Huffington Post when it launched, and the guy that I was dealing with was your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's right.
Every single day, I'd be sitting in an apartment in London, and he'd be instant messaging me as I wrote stuff to him, and he would tweak it, edit it. And then there would be a time when I would write something that would really piss Ken Lair or Arianna off, and he would have to call me and ask me to change something. And then almost reflexively, within like a minute of calling me, he would call me back and say, "Ignore me. You have to write whatever you want to write. I will never tell you what to do." And that's when we became really good friends, because I realized that, like, you know, he had major balls. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that, and I remember hearing about you long before I met you, because he was fascinated with your what you were doing and your writing. He loved your style. He loved your humor and your insight. And he, I think, was at that time also really trying to own who he was,
right,
and become his own person and no longer be in the shadows of people like Matt Drudge and Arianna Huffington. And
yes.
So I think in, you know, the way you described him saying, "Can you change that?" and then calling you back and saying, "No, wait, keep it the way it is." I think that was sort of him coming into his own at the same time and going, "Let's own this. Let's
yeah.
be who we are."
And by the way, I wasn't trying to blow my own horn. You know that Andrew wrote like half of my best jokes.
Did not know that.
You know, I would send a piece that would be, let's say, like 1,500 words. It would come back, and you know Andrew, it came back 3,000 words because he added so many jokes, and some of them were so, absurd and surreal and like from another planet, that it would take a while to understand what he was doing. And then I would edit it out, and then I go, "No, wait, I can't edit this out. It's too good."
It's too good. I know. Yeah, he used to call those your sort of like double secret blog posts.
Yes.
Where you were kind of, you know, sneaking in through a back door of the Huffington Post and writing things you weren't really supposed to.
You know, when we first met, I had flown out to California. It might have been 2005. And mm-hmm. we met because I think it was at a Japanese restaurant. It was
Yamashiro, I think it was.
Exactly. And you guys always had an unusual group of friends. It was like an old school 1970s talk show wherever you were.
That was a really interesting group. I can't remember who initially formed that group. I want to say, I think it was Dale Lawner, who's a screenwriter. He wrote My Cousin Vinny, among other things. And so that group was a lot of, just an eclectic group of writers and journalists and not necessarily politically like-minded people. You know, Andrew was always just fascinated with storytellers and, loved being around all types of people. I don't remember how you came into that group.
I don't either.
Being up there. Yeah.
I have no idea. I just ended up showing up because he had been calling me and I was meeting Ariana for the first time, and she had me over, and it was like with all of these pretentious liberals, and John Cusack was there, and I was and Andrew was saying, get over here, and she wouldn't let me leave, and then finally she had her maid drive me over, and she gave me like five books that she had written, or like a book on Picasso.
Right.
They were really heavy, and I left them in the car.
Oh.
But it's just so bad. But it was so much fun whenever we got together.
Somebody else now has her Picasso book, but it's inscribed "Egg."
Yeah.
She regifted it, I'm sure.
Yes. But I used to see – and when I was there, this other odd thing that I didn't know about you – so your maiden name is Bean. And I grew up watching your dad. I was like – so I ended up staying one night – At your father's, I guess he had a home or an apartment. Your mom and dad had a home in Venice, in California, and they'd offered me a room to sleep there instead of staying at a hotel. And that your dad is Orson Bean, who's basically kind of like for me a 60s and 70s kind of legend because he was on everything, right?
Yeah, he was. He was, that's what's so interesting. Another sort of household name to some people. My dad is a household name, and some people have never heard of him. But he's so many different things to so many different people because he has done so much. I mean, he's a raconteur, most notably, and he's he hosted The Tonight Show over 100 times when Johnny Carson was absent, or he was a guest on The Tonight Show, I think within that. Those appearances amounted to like over 100 times, and he's been on Broadway, television, movies, he often gets recognized, and it kind of spans across various generations.
Yes, I remember him, I think he was like a witness in Anatomy of a Murder. I remember, I think.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember him there, and then I always remember him as a kid growing up in the 70s. He was on so many talk shows and game shows. He was just like the most popular guest,
Yeah, when we were growing up, game shows were huge, and they're making a comeback, a lot of them. But yeah, the Match Game, Tattletales, which he did with my mom, Carolyn, which was like a couples game show, and he did To Tell the Truth, and I think Hollywood Squares and all of those were a huge part of my growing up too.
Mm-hmm. I loved it when I met him. Andrew brought your dad to the refrigerator, and there was a news clipping of 9/11 on the fridge, and then Andrew had your dad explain why, which I can't. I just remember it was the fact that this was such a huge thing, and you must think about it, or you must see it every day. You must be reminded of this every day. It was something like that. He was very solemn about it, And then he told a joke after. He told a body joke after it.
that's him in a nutshell. I believe that news clipping is still on his refrigerator. He never wanted to forget 9/11, but he just finished doing a one-man show about his life, which his life was very heavy and tragic, and as a child, and he, throughout the show, he would tell some really, really tragic story and then follow it up immediately with a magic trick and a joke.
Man.
To sort of lighten the mood, and you can watch his one-man show up on YouTube. But it's just that's his style. And he's always had, he always has various clippings around the house, either on the fridge or in the pantry, things from like the Weekly World News that say, mother thinks son is Hitler and kills him, with like a multiple explanation points. And then he'll have the 9/11 clipping as well.
Yeah.
So,
were you ever political? I mean, do you find it surreal or weird to that you were part of a political force without really it being your choice, and that the name is now so inextricably linked to the White House and the – I mean, it's – that's why I said a household name, is that it's everywhere. I mean, were you prepared for that?
No, I definitely wasn't prepared for it. I mean, it wasn't something that happened overnight, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I never was political. You know, I've always had my opinions, of course. But, you know, I was a registered independent mm-hmm. from the first time I was old enough to vote. And I think the first time I did vote was for H. Ross Perot.
Right.
Because Andrew and I were just kind of like, you know, fascinated and amused and trying to figure it all out. But at that time, Andrew was becoming increasingly like obsessed with the Clarence Thomas hearings, and politics became more prominent in his life, and he became more interested in all of that. And I was never political in the way he was. And he started to be aware of the effect that it was having. He would say, Susie never signed up for this, because he, you know, as he became more of a public figure, mm-hmm. you know, people would approach us and say things at dinner parties and at schools, and, you know, and so, it's not something I could really been prepared for. I think I always knew that Andrew was going to make a name for himself. When we met and started dating, he was a waiter, and I looked at him and I was like, this guy's going to do something, you know, and he wanted to be a comedy writer. So I figured it was going to be that, you know, and he always was very funny, but, I never figured it would be this, but it didn't surprise. It actually doesn't surprise me. You know, I it was only a matter of what's he going to do next? What's it going to be? Because it's going to be something, you know?
Well, he was like one of the most comical and hilarious people that I've ever met. And you mentioned that he wanted to be a comedy writer. In a way, he was. Even his Washington Times pieces were funny. He would send them to me. But like you, speaking of good writing, you've been writing about your life with Andrew and the effect it's had on you and stories about him. And you shared it with me, and it was so much of it was apolitical. And it made me think that all the time that I spent with Andrew, we almost never really talked about politics. Like when we were out at a bar or anyone or doing anything, we were just having fun. He was just kind of a fun, loving, maybe eccentric type, but he wasn't angry. Right?
No. I mean, I remember we all went on the National Review cruise mm-hmm. together, and you and Andrew were both panelists.
That's right.
That. And so, but other than the work you were doing there and the reason we were there, it was really just a vacation with friends. You know, he was a lighthearted person. He could talk to anyone about anything, and it didn't have to be politics. And, you know, at some point that became, you know, difficult to navigate sometimes. Mm-hmm. I came home to our first apartment when we first started dating to find Jehovah's Witnesses trying to get out, because they were literally, you know, trapped in there. He was so fascinated with exploring people and stories and ideas, and he could talk to anyone about anything, and he knew something about everything.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't just politics. Of course, later in his career, when, you know, it kind of took over in a way, you know, mm-hmm. that became the reason people wanted to talk to him in some instances. So, you know, there was a lot of that too.
I think the thing that he was, well, there are a couple of things he was most really passionate about. One of them was just 80s music. I think he felt more strongly about new wave music than politics.
He did. He loved it. And he had this this DJ, you know, I think like Friday night Twitter DJ thing that he would do with
yes.
80s music.
Yes.
And I wasn't on Twitter. I'm still not on Twitter. So I wasn't able to really follow it when it was happening. But he loved it. He was obsessed with like new wave British pop,
yeah.
you know.
His favorite band, I think, was The. If I remember, because he would always talk about the, and I was more of a Smiths fan. And so we would talk about the differences between the bands. And I think we spent more time talking about that than anything. You know, you mentioned you voted for Perot, and we kind of have a Perot now. What do you think Andrew would make of the whole situation now? Would he be laughing? I mean, what is that even possible to predict? You would know, but...
You know, I really don't know. Yeah. I mean, that is a question that comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can really speak to that, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he would think.
Yeah. And what is it that you would like people to know about Andrew that people who think they know him really don't know? Because the name is thrown around constantly. Is there something that people miss about him that you would express?
I mean, I think because he considered himself to be somewhat of a warrior, people assume that he was an instigator.
Right.
And I don't think he really wasn't a fight picker. He liked people to a fault. It's mm-hmm. like it was pretty easy to ingratiate yourself to Andrew. He was someone, though, who felt he needed to stand up for what was right and stand up to bullies. And there was this very intense warrior-like side of him, mm-hmm. but the side that people didn't really get to see when he became more of a public figure was that he was such a lighthearted, funny, crazy, smart, sensitive guy. There is some of that out there. I mean, he went on your show, Red Eye,
and
I think tweaked his nipples after snorting a powdered form of red wine or
that's
something.
True.
And so that is out there, but I don't think most people are Googling, Breitbart along with the terms goofy, lighthearted, silly, they're more Googling controversy Trump,
Yes. It's so funny. But you just conjured up two memories for me was what was in the green room. Like he, again, not talking about politics. He was mm-hmm. always talking about fan. He was worried because your daughter was upset with him because he left a slumber party early and he mm-hmm. felt so bad about it that he couldn't concentrate on the show. And he was just kind of like pacing. And it was just, it was just such an interesting thing that he had this. That was a bigger deal to him than anything. And he always used to say that he was so lucky that he was married to you. He was like always – like he would say to me, I can't believe she married me, because we would sit and commiserate over stuff. And he would say that. He would just laugh and go, how did I get this lucky? But – oh, God, I forgot. Oh, when you said he was he's easily – he likes people easily.
Yes.
He would introduce – see, this was always a flaw of his. Like, he would introduce you to somebody that is not a good person by axe. But he was so forgiving. Like, a bad person, but, he took in stray dogs. You know what I mean?
He did. My dad always says about his wife, Allie, when he's ready to leave a party, he says she has this character flaw. She likes people. And Andrew and I had to develop kind of a shorthand at some point that meant, me looking at him, which said, I love you, but I'm ready to go home. I'll be taking the car and you can take a taxi in 3 hours when you're done talking to this guy. And sometimes that guy would come home with him.
Right.
And then stay at our house for a weekend. I'm not kidding. I mean, he would bring people home and, just the way he opened my dad's guest house to you.
Yes. I was one of those stray dogs.
We got lucky and, the stray dog was Greg Gutfeld, and sometimes it wasn't so lucky.
Exactly. I would always talk to him like after meeting somebody that he like kind of foisted on me. I go like, what are you thinking? Who is this person?
Exactly.
But I
know. Well, like I said, I mean, it was so easy. He was really interested in just exploring people's characters and personalities. And sometimes he would delve in a little, without really vetting the situation,
right.
I would say, and he was a nice person, too. He didn't want to turn people away, I suppose.
No, he was just, he was always... even with adversaries in politics, like they would meet him, and it was like very hard for them to stay angry at him because he would just make you laugh. What's your life like now? I mean, I don't want to. I've kept you on for like 21 minutes, and you have an army of amazing kids. So your life is way busier than mine, and I'm assuming it never ends.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew and I had together four kids, mm-hmm. and they are amazing, mm-hmm. fascinating people. I'm always really, really fascinated by the whole nature versus nurture thing, because it's been 5 years since we lost their dad, and yet they still exhibit so many mannerisms and or the, you know, the way their minds work, the questions they ask, things like that. You know, Andrew as a child used to ask his father questions like, what's infinity? And they, you know, they're like that. They're these inquisitive, smart, funny people. One of them in particular, our son Charlie, who's about to turn 13, he is physically so similar to Andrew in the way he walks and his expressions and his coloring. And we have his, you know, we have a photo of Andrew on the wall from when he was about 12 or 13 years old, and people think it's Charlie because it looks just like Charlie. And so they're all so they're all such individuals. Like, sometimes I'm confused by how they can all be so different in so many ways, being raised in the same house. But then again, they all have these similar traits that tie them together, you know. But they're all really, really smart and cool. Our oldest, Samson's about to graduate high school tomorrow.
Wow.
And then we're going to have our daughter Mia's also in high school, and then Charlie and Will are going to be in middle school next year. So everybody's grown up and doing great. And we live right near my we live around the corner from my dad and Allie, and, you know, a couple miles really from my mom. So, and my brother's around the corner. So we're good. We're lucky.
That's
to
good.
Have everybody around us.
And before I let you go, I want to thank you for doing this. And I encourage you to keep writing. I'm here to help and do whatever you want. And I enjoyed what you shared with me, the stories. And it causes me to think of so many things that I have stored in my head. Like, even just talking to you now, it reminds me of certain events that I completely slipped by. So it's such a valuable exercise to put this down on paper, even if it's just for your family, you know?
Yeah, it's been really, really therapeutic and like a healing process for me just to write. But initially I started writing for my kids because I want them to remember who he was as a person. And it's so easy. You know, when I think of my own childhood, sure, I can conjure up stories when asked, like, what was it like growing up with my dad or whatever. But really, it's like I feel like most of the time I'm just culling through like a shoebox full of Polaroid pictures, you know, and I have to really, really make myself remember. So I want to put down these stories on paper for my kids, and I want to collect stories from other people who had personal interactions with Andrew, because I don't want them to just see the biased tidbits that are out there on the internet, you know, that really only capture his persona. They don't necessarily capture who he was, this whole other side of him. I mean, he was this intense and thoughtful and intelligent person, but he was also, like you said, a goofball. And I think you referred to him recently as just a big, hairy dad.
Yeah.
And he was that.
Yes.
And he was so many things. And he was such a good friend to so many people, and so many people who disagreed with him.
Right.
You know, he just, he was all of those things.
Yeah. Well, I
want them to remember that.
Yeah. And I want you just to keep writing. And like I said, I will help and pester and make sure that it happens. But Susie, I've kept you on a lot, and
thank you.
And I appreciate you agreeing to do this. And I think it made me feel good. And I hope it was a positive experience for you.
Absolutely. No, thank you. It was really great.
All right. Thank you, Susie.
I even got dressed, even though I'm just on the podcast. I'm like, I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to get dressed. I'm going to be, like, professional about this.
I actually did not even drink for this. I remained sober. I thought about it.
I would have, but I have to go pick up my kids from school, so that wouldn't be a pretty sight.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Susie. Talk soon, okay?
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
See you. Bye-bye.